Hi, this is Ernie Fazio, and the show is Earnestly Speaking. We're talking to Carl Grossman. Carl is a journalist for many, many years, and he's handled some of the most interesting topics, mainly around the environment. And we were just talking about the oil industry and how unnecessary it could be if we had the people who had the wherewithal and the will in Congress and in the presidency to not let it happen, continue to happen. Carl, are you there with me yet?
Right here.
Okay. There is, I remember seeing something that you had a hand in writing on. Power of getting power from satellites. In other words, I've been working with the scientists over in Brookhaven National Laboratories who designed the maglev. They also have a maglev vehicle that can launch a payload at a fraction of the cost that it costs now, and because of that lower cost, They're saying that they can build gigantic reflectors in a geostationary position.
Right.
And that can bring electric power down to the Earth by using a microwave. And I said, microwave? What if I was on a plane and I went through the field? They said, it's such a low level of microwave, it's probably less than cosmic effect. So I said, but would it give you enough power? And they said, absolutely, it would. Now, have you looked into that?
I haven't looked into that particular technology, but in terms of stories I've done through the years, and let me tell you about space and power and what I've done in that regard. I was sitting in the same Lazy Boy as I'm sitting right now. It's an old Lazy Boy, back in 1985, reading about how NASA planned to launch two shuttles in 1986, one being a shuttle called the Challenger, and both shuttles would be lofting plutonium-fueled space probes. And then the article was in the Department of Energy newsletter, spoke about how, in terms of an accident on launch, one out of 100 chemical rockets, normal rockets, explode or blow up on launch, fail on launch catastrophically. In the lower atmosphere. In other words, it talked about NASA, DOE, doing an environmental impact statement regards to the possibility of an accident. So I used the Freedom of Information Act to ask NASA, DOE, and some of the national laboratories.
Did they give you complete information, or is it so redacted you can't use it?
Well, sometimes it's helpful, even when it's redacted. For example, it took me almost a year to get the information. It was early 85 that I saw this item. Late 85, I finally got the stuff. And, like, for example, there was, I would say, 300 pages, 200 or 300 pages on the impacts of the plutonium getting out, particularly in particles, on people and so forth, the health impacts and so forth. Guess what was redacted? All this information about people ending up with cancer and what have you. So obviously, they could have been a real, it was a serious issue that I was on. But I didn't know whether I should really get into it because you don't want to scare people as a journalist. You really don't if you're an ethical, responsible journalist. And what they said also in this EIS, this environmental impact statement, was the likelihood of a catastrophic shuttle accident was 1 in 100,000. And these are not. Those are poor odds in terms of an accident. So
it could do. It's not a ratio you want to live with.
Well, until I was driving to work on the Long Island Expressway to teach my investigative reporting class, it was January 1986, first class of the semester, and I hear on the radio that the Challenger blew up. And I mean, I knew that the next mission of the Challenger was a nuclear mission. And I jumped into the P.C. Richards store along the LIE there, in Hot Park, and I looked at the TV screens. It was that iconic image of technological failure. And I called The Nation magazine, written for The Nation magazine for many years. And broke the story about how the Challenger's next mission was to be a nuclear mission. And I've been on that issue for decades. I wrote a book called The Wrong Stuff. I did a TV documentary, Nukes in Space, The Nuclearization and Weaponization of the Heavens. And, Ernie, what's really interesting is that, as in space, you can do what you can do as on Earth. Last week, the Rosetta space probe, this isn't, you know, a European, this isn't a NASA probe or a Russian probe, it's a probe by the European Space Agency, rendezvoused with a comet more than 300 million miles from the sun, way out there near Jupiter. And guess what it was energized with? Solar power. When I got on this story of nukes in space, NASA insisted, the U.S. Department of Energy insisted, we need nuclear in space because beyond the orbit of Mars, you can't really harvest solar power.
Yeah, you know, I was reading that article and it said as little as 4% of the sun's power will still continue to operate that vehicle.
Yeah, well, that's the piece I wrote. In fact, listeners can Google it.
That's where I read it.
I wrote it. But the shame is that the story in the New York Times didn't report on it. I mean, this was the breakthrough. In fact, the European Space Agency, and I quote them at length, speaks about how this is a breakthrough using solar so far out in space. And finally, at long last, NASA has decided that we'll do solar too on space probes. So they've, it's up there now. It's the Juno space probe. It's on its way to Jupiter, energized with solar. And when I talk about the dangers of nuclear in space, it isn't like saying the sky is falling. In fact, in terms of nuclear debris and nuclear poisons, the sky has already fallen. We've had some serious accidents. We and the Russians. In 1964, one of our satellites, which was energized with plutonium, very toxic material, came crashing down, and the plutonium was dispersed all over the world. Dr. John Gottman of the University of California at Berkeley, an MD, a PhD, a co-discoverer of a number of isotopes, he long connected the SNAP 9A accident, this is the 64 accident, with a spike of lung cancer on Earth. The Soviets, now it's Russia, they've had their accidents using nuclear in space. I mean, Newton's law is still, I mean, what goes up can easily come down on one's head. And there's been a failure rate with both our program and the Soviets.
By the way, speaking of nuclear, somebody turned me on at Lyft, Long Island Forum for Technology, to a company called TerraPower. Are you familiar with it?
Nope, I'm not, Ernie.
TerraPower is advocating nuclear use, but it consumes nuclear waste and renders it, neutral.
To tell you the truth, Ernie, I've been on the nuclear issue ever since, and Long Island was very central to that because.
But the beauty of the TerraPower, as I read it on the internet, is that it can be made small. In other words, we could have a power plant in, say, Huntington, and it would service that area. The whole thing would be as big as a garage.
To tell you the truth, Ernie, after being on the nuclear issue, that story, so to speak, and I've written bunches of books on that, done many TV shows. Long Island was central. Shoreham was to be the first of 7 to 11 nuclear plants on Long Island that Long Island Lighting Company wanted to build. And listening to the baloney from the nuclear engineers, there's a bridge in Brooklyn that I'll sell you these claims are ridiculous.
Don't bother, I already own it.
And the thing is, solar is here. It's like it's here in space. It's here at my little house in Sag Harbor. I went to the parking lot recently in Riverhead.
Carl, I'm going to have to put the rest of this into the next segment. This is Ernie Fazio. I'm talking to Carl Grossman, a journalist of great esteem. This is Long Island News Radio 103.9, and this is Earnestly Speaking. Thank you for listening.